to our gospel passage this morning, I just wanted to give sort of a note on the lectionary. The lectionary, our three-year cycle of readings that gives us direction every week about which texts to read and to study. And sometimes the texts are chosen because they're complementary or they have a similar theme. Other times the texts are continuous readings. And so the last few weeks we've been reading from 1 Corinthians in a continuous reading, and we've been reading the Sermon on the Mount as a continuous reading. So because of that, the themes from 1 Corinthians don't always match up with the themes from the Sermon on the Mount. And this Sunday is in particular an example of that. The 1 Corinthians reading is about divisions in the church, whereas Jesus' Sermon on the Mount this week is about some moral teachings on specific moral topics. So anyway, just sort of a note for you that sometimes we have lectionary texts that go together nicely thematically, and other times they don't. And the reason that is because they're chosen to read through the whole letter or big chunks of a letter at a time in a continuous reading. So with that note, we turn now to Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5, verses 21 through 37. And we hear Jesus talking from the Sermon on the Mount to his disciples, but also to some Jewish Galileans that have gathered around. And he talks to them about four different topics. He talks to them about murder and anger. He talks about adultery and divorce, and also oath-taking. So let us listen together for God's word. You have heard it said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder. And whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, 'You fool,' you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. You have heard it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery,' but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go to hell. It was also said, 'Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce.' But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the grounds of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard it was said to those of ancient times, 'You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord.' But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from May God bless the reading and hearing of this God's holy word. Let us be together in prayer. Loving God, we reflect on your word this morning, asking that you open us up to it. Help us to hear even these teachings that are difficult. Challenge us and give us a way forward into your life. So like many of you probably, last Sunday I was gathered with my family around the television screen, plate of nachos on my lap, of course, watching Super Bowl 45, which I should say was the most watched television program in television history. Some 111 million people were watching the screen at any one time, and over 150 million people watched at least part of it. Now, the Super Bowl itself is a big draw of Super Bowl Sunday, right? But it's not the only draw. There is the pregame show and the postgame show, and there are the Super Bowl parties, of course. But there's also the commercials, right? Now, I have friends that never watch football, don't like the game, don't understand the game, but on Super Bowl Sunday, they're sitting in front of their TVs watching the Super Bowl. Why?
They'll tell you because they want to see the commercials.
If you don't see the commercials, you feel like you've missed out on a big chunk of popular culture. When everyone else is gathered around the water cooler on Monday morning, you've missed out on all that. Right? This has been the way it has been since 1984. Now, I know you're all too young to remember 1984, but if you'll maybe remember, in 1984, there was this famous Apple computing ad where there was an auditorium, and there were a bunch of folks in the auditorium all dressed the same and looking the same, and they were watching this big screen with Big Brother on, sort of a 1984 George Orwellian scene. And into this auditorium runs this woman who's being chased by security guards. But before they can catch her, she takes a big hammer and she spins around and she throws it into the screen and destroys Big Brother and releases Big Brother's grasp on the people. Remember that? It was this amazing and important television ad. It was sort of a monumental moment in advertising history and in Super Bowl history and in the history of our popular culture. And ever since 1984, in that particular ad, the ads have gotten more expensive and sort of more outrageous and more amazingly produced, and they just become a spectacle that we know of them today. Now, over the years, there have been many ads that I've liked and many ads I haven't liked so much, and a whole bunch of them that I couldn't really remember because they didn't make much of an impact on me. But this Sunday, there was one ad in particular that made me do something that I had never done before. Now, I don't know if you saw this ad. In fact, there were three ads put together by Groupon.com. And there was one ad in particular about the people of Tibet. And it started out with this beautiful picture of the mountains, and then they flashed to some Tibetan people, and then it immediately flashed to Timothy Hutton, an actor sitting in the Chicago restaurant being served a plate of fish curry. Now, here is the actual text of the ad itself. This is what it said. It said, "The people of Tibet are in trouble. Their very culture is in jeopardy, but they still whip up an amazing fish curry. And since 200 of us bought at Groupon.com, we're each getting $30 worth of Tibetan food for $15. That was the ad. There was a one similar to it that dealt with the rainforest, and also the one that dealt with it that was dealt with the Save the Whales campaign. So I saw that ad, and I wasn't exactly sure what I had seen. So I turned on my computer, and I went to YouTube, and I watched the commercial a few more times. And then I went to Groupon's Facebook page and found that hundreds and thousands of people were already posting. And there were Twitter feeds on Google with people sort of talking about it and many people expressing their displeasure and many just confused. Did we really just see a commercial that was exploiting suffering Tibetans in order to make a splash at the Super Bowl? Did we really just see a commercial minimizing suffering in order to bring in profits? Is that what we saw? Well, I did some more research, and I went to Groupon.com's website, where they had a little explanation of the ad campaign, which is called Save the Money. And they said, well, we started out as a company called ThePoint.com, which was a way of gathering people online to form a tipping point for social change. The idea being to get enough people together to care about a certain thing that they can cause social change. So out of their roots of social change, they developed this commercial venture called Groupon.com. And they said, well, we weren't making fun of the Tibetan people or the whales or the rainforest. We were really just making fun of ourselves. It was sort of an inside joke, and we were hoping in the process that you would be reminded of these organizations and donate money to them. That was their justification. Well, if that was the case, it failed miserably, I think, because most people didn't get it. So I was kind of fuming at this point, as you can attest to, and I fired off an email to Groupon.com, which I had never really done before. And I didn't expect to get a response, but 5 minutes later, at about 8:30 at night on Super Bowl Sunday, I got an email from Megan, who wrote to me this. She said, "We certainly don't mean to offend with our advertising. We think renting celebrities to promote our Save the Money campaign is pretty funny, but we understand if it doesn't tickle you the right way." She understood that exploiting suffering people didn't tickle me the right way. So, I was fuming. And so, at this point, the Super Bowl just sort of faded into the background, and I spent the rest of the night sort of on Facebook and Twitter and following the discussion that was there.
So hold that story in your minds for just a few minutes while I talk about the gospel, and we'll get back to that. Monday morning, I woke up, kind of forgetting about Groupon.com for the time being, and I did what I normally do, which is I open up my Bible and I read the lectionary text for the coming Sunday. And I do that early, so it gives me a chance to sort of walk around with them and sort of live with them for a while and asking the question, what does this have to do with my life? So I opened up to the gospel reading, which is from chapter 5, verses 21 through 37, which we just read, excited that it was the Sermon on the Mount, because I love the Sermon on the Mount. But then I got to these particular readings, and I was reminded, well, that this is sort of a notoriously hard passage to preach about. That this is notoriously challenging information here. You read it with me. Jesus is using very black and white language. He's being very strong in his sentiments here about some very challenging moral topics. Right? He's talking to us about anger and murder. He's talking to us about adultery and divorce and oath taking, which is hard for us, right? Because what he says in there, he talks about anger being equated to murder. I don't know anyone in this room who doesn't experience anger on a regular basis. He equates lust with adultery. Well, all of us experience lust at one time or another. And divorce. He says the only way that you can get a divorce is for unchastity or infidelity. And divorce rates in the United States are quite high. There are many folks among us who are divorced. And then oath-taking. Jesus doesn't have any patience for oath-taking. But who among us doesn't have some oath that we're living up to, whether it's at work or in a legal situation or in a relationship or another? So Jesus sets this really high moral bar for us that's really hard for us to live out in our lives. And so I said, you know, I've got to preach on Corinthians. I've got to preach on Deuteronomy. I have to preach on something else. This is too hard. But then I closed the Bible. And then Tuesday and Wednesday came, and I read it again, and sort of living into it, and I said, you know, I think God's calling us to reflect on this. And I think God's calling us to reflect on this in light of the Super Bowl ads. Not topically, mind you. There's not a great connection between adultery and the Tibetan commercial. But you see, each one of these little moral snippets begins with a refrain, a phrase that says, you have heard it said, but I say to you. Let's pick that apart just a little bit. Right before our reading this morning, in verse 17 of chapter 5, Jesus makes a statement to the people he's preaching to. And he says, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. And what Jesus is doing is he's saying that I am in continuity with I have come not to get rid of everything that God has told us up to this point, but to take what God has given us up to this point and to expand it and to fill it and to perfect it. So when we get to these moral statements here, Jesus is referring back to that. And he says, you have heard it said. I'm aware of the tradition, he's telling his Jewish audience. I'm one of you. I get it. My job is to be faithful to God's command and God's law. You have heard it said, for example, thou shalt not murder. Right? One of the Ten Commandments. So he's sort of letting them know that he gets it, that he understands where they're at. But see, he doesn't leave them there. He says, you have heard it said, but I say to you. He's taking the tradition and he's asking them to expand it, and to come to a new understanding of the morality of the day. So, for example, when it comes to anger, he says, you shall not murder. He doesn't say that murder is a good thing. He says, you shall not murder, which is an external action, right? But to it, he adds this internal addition. It says, but I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. He takes what was there, and he adds to it and expands it as a way of fulfilling it in light of the fact that Jesus is the Messiah and the kingdom has come near. He's already preached that sermon back in chapter 4. So he's saying, look at people. because the kingdom is near, because the Messiah has now arrived, all that you live by is still valuable, but it's not the whole story. There's new information coming into you, and I'm telling you about it. The old morality is valid, but it's not the whole story, and to that, I'm adding this stuff. So, for murder and anger, he has this internal state of unforgiveness and being angry at brothers and sisters, and he equates that with murder. And he does a similar thing with adultery as well, saying that the external act of adultery is equated also with the internal state of lust. You have heard it said, but I say to you. Now, topically, Jesus here is not really sort of saying much about the Super Bowl. But the principle that he is giving us is about Jesus' moral imagination. He's saying, people, I want you to think differently. I want you to think bigger. I want you to understand the world in new ways in light of me and my teaching, and ultimately in light of the cross and resurrection of Jesus Christ. So, here's the hard part for us this morning, I think. Jesus is preaching to the first century Jews in Galilee, saying to them that your traditions are valid, but they're not the whole story. So you need to change. And in the same way, Jesus is saying to us today, what you think is right and wrong, the moral code that you've been living by, it's valid, but it's not the whole story. I'm calling you to a greater moral imagination, to think out of the moral box and to align yourselves with God's will and God's way in light of me. So, that's a way of saying, we're doing okay, people, but we can do better. And that's hard. So, here's where the Super Bowl comes back around for me. After I got the email from Megan telling me that I wasn't tickled in the right way, I sent out an email to Sojourners Magazine. Sojourners Magazine is a Christian magazine that is focused on social issues from a Christian perspective. So I wrote to them and I said, you know, this ad was on the Super Bowl and I would support a public condemnation of the ad and also the company that produced it. And I didn't think I'd hear anything, but the next day, Hannah wrote me back from Sojourners.com. And she said, we agree completely, and we would like for you to write a blog article for our God's Politics blog so that we can post it on our website. I was very excited about that, so I spent a big chunk of the next couple of days writing a one-page blog entry about my feelings about the ad. Well, as it turned out, I was about 5 minutes too late, because right before I submitted mine, they printed somebody else's that also was sort of a similar idea. So it didn't get published. But I did print it out, and I put it on the table in the narthex for you to look at, so that you can read and talk about it. It would be great to let me know your thoughts about it as well. Publication aside, though, the whole process of seeing the ad and researching and thinking about it, and also studying the gospel, it became quite clear to me. Well, two things became clear to me. First thing is that, like the first century Jews, we have our own moral code in this culture, our own understanding of what's right and what's wrong. And the Super Bowl commercials in particular have their certain moral code as well. The second thing that's clear to me is that what our culture considers right and wrong is not always what God thinks is right and wrong. We should not equate our morality with God's morality, our way of understanding how the world should be with the way that God is. So whenever I come in contact with things like that Super Bowl ad that seems so far away from God's vision of peace and justice and righteousness, I think it's important that we raise that up and say, you know, it's not okay. I think if Jesus was here seeing those Super Bowl ads, I think on Monday morning, Jesus would find a high place around the water cooler and stand up and say to the people, you have heard it said that anything goes on the Super Bowl. But I say to you, I think what Jesus might say is that you have heard it said that anything goes
in a Super Bowl commercial, but I tell you, it's never okay to exploit the suffering of others for any reason. You have heard it said, you might say, that no publicity is bad publicity. But I tell you, publicity that is tone deaf to the wounded and hurting of this world will be subject to judgment. You have heard it said, you might say, that a good quarterly earnings report is most important. But I tell you that the care of our neighbors is even more important than that. Easy, I think, when it comes to the Super Bowl, to sort of get lost in the gloss and the entertainment value and sort of the controversy and the great production values of it all, and to just say, you know, that's just the Super Bowl. We're supposed to be controversial. We're supposed to be doing things that move us to talk about it on Monday morning. After all, that's profits for the company, and we certainly need jobs in this country. Profits are a good thing. It's easy to sort of make excuses, but I can't help but think that 111 million people at least saw that. And though it wasn't intended to be making light of suffering people, in effect, that's what happened. Few people understood what Groupon.com was trying to do. And so I think it's important when we see the culture in such a dramatic way working against what we work so hard in this church to be for, that we need to have the courage to stand up and speak. So I think that Jesus this morning calls us to share his moral imagination, to think out of our moral boxes and to find the courage when God's morality and our culture's morality are at odds with one another, and that we become the voice for God's peace and justice and righteousness. That we be those who say, you know what? It doesn't matter if it's funny. It's really not okay to make fun or exploit or to minimize the suffering of Tibetans or so God, may you give us courage. May you give us a voice. May you make us those who speak out against a morality that is not your own, calling us to a grander vision, that we might establish a world in your fashion, a world of justice and peace and righteousness, a world where no one suffers anymore.